President Donald Trump moved aggressively to tighten immigration this week, signing executive actions to jumpstart construction of a wall along the entire U.S.-Mexico border.
Beginning today, the United States of America gets back control of its borders, gets back its borders.
I'm Norma Martinez, and this is Fronteras, a public radio show about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. San Diego knows a lot about border fences. Maureen Cavanaugh of KPBS talked with California Congressman Scott Peters, a Democratic member of the Congressional Border Caucus.
San Diego County has a border fence extending across our border with Mexico. Would the Trump border wall extending across the entire border be similar to what we have already?
I'm not sure that we've heard the details. First it was going to be a wall, now it's going to be a fence. But either way, it's a real waste of money.
Why do you say that?
You know, in San Diego, we understand the security challenges and the economic opportunities at the border. In fact, I often say we see the border as an opportunity, not a threat. It's important to our trade. What we should be investing in is infrastructure that makes screening more efficient and secure, that makes 99% of the stuff that comes into the country that's good come through securely and more quickly. We know that border delays that we'd suffered before infrastructure was upgraded cost us tens of thousands of jobs and billions of dollars of economic activity. And this kind of statement out about what the border is through this wall really sets us backward.
How much is this border fence or wall estimated to cost?
I've heard a lot of guesses, but we're talking about billions of dollars. You know, I understand that people feel that. And I agree that we need to secure the border, but this is not even the best way to do that. I think there's a lot of mountainous areas on the interior that just makes no sense to do this. There's other technical solutions. And more important, you know, we have to deal with a whole range of immigration issues and trade issues that are much more pressing than this symbolic wall.
Does Congress have to authorize that expenditure for the wall?
Well, I heard he wants to do it out of existing funds. I'm not sure what that means. But, yeah, typically Congress has to both authorize the money and then appropriate it as part of the budget process.
Any word on how Mexico would be charged for that expense?
That's a question that answers itself, Maureen. And, Maureen, the Mexico is not going to pay for this wall. Our American taxpayers are going to pay for it. We would be better off investing this in other infrastructure. And a better solution all around would be the comprehensive immigration reform bill passed by the Senate in 2013, which had enforcement for the border and earned path to citizenship, would have added tremendous growth for the economy and dealt with a lot of labor shortages that we're suffering across our economy, actually improved Social Security and, you know, would have done a lot of things for us. That's still the path we should pursue. And suggesting that this wall is the answer, certainly in and of itself, is just leading us astray.
What have the members of the Congressional Border Caucus been saying about the potential impact of a border wall?
Well, just Monday, we had the Border Caucus met. We had a hearing on what we've heard about the Trump administration. Obviously, it was before this particular announcement, but he's been talking about this wall for a while. My guest was Jerry Sanders, who obviously is now the chairman of the Regional Chamber of Commerce, who came to explain what other people said along the border from Texas into San Diego, is that we need to view the border as an economic opportunity and that trade with Mexico occurs throughout the country, you know, from San Diego to Maine, from Florida to Washington State. And this is kind of the way that Trump has talked about the border is really not truthful, let alone productive. And that's a consistent opinion of chambers of commerce along the border.
Was there any chance that building a border wall would actually generate jobs and stimulate the economy along the border?
Well, of course, there's construction jobs associated with building anything. But we know we need to build a lot of infrastructure across the country. And this is a waste of money. You know, let's rebuild our bridges and roads and make access to broadband available to everyone. Let's deal with our ports. There's a lot of ways we could be fixing our infrastructure that would be employing people. This is a waste of money. It sends the wrong signal, and it's certainly bad for our economy in San Diego.
Just a question about the second executive order, the one that cracks down on sanctuary cities. Any chance San Diego could be affected by that?
San Diego, we don't ask our police officers to enforce the immigration laws, the federal immigration laws. They're charged with keeping our neighborhoods safe. I think like many cities, we've chosen to let the federal government take care of immigration. And I think that's the appropriate way to handle this. You know, we don't know yet what Mr. Trump's deportation policies will look like. But again, this sanctuary cities thing is largely a political construct. I don't think most mayors think that using local resources to enforce federal law is anything other than an unfunded mandate, which, you know, we have enough of, frankly.
That was Maureen Cavanaugh of KPBS and California Democratic Congressman Scott Peters. The officers that patrol the border have a different view on the wall. The U.S. Border Patrol Agents Union backed Donald Trump's presidency. NPR's Steve Inskeep talked with union leader Brandon Judd about the president's executive actions on NPR's Morning Edition on Thursday.
When President Trump spoke to people at the Department of Homeland Security yesterday, Brandon Judd was in the audience. He's president of the union that represents U.S. Border Patrol agents, the National Border Patrol Council, which endorsed Trump during the campaign. He was present to hear the president say he's going ahead with building a wall on the U.S.-Mexico border, among other immigration measures. And he's in our studio this morning. Mr. Judd, welcome back to the program.
Good morning, Steve.
So how different is the border going to be, assuming that the president's orders are carried out here?
I don't think it's going to be, well, okay, it's going to be a lot more secure. But what we're talking about is we're talking about a wall in strategic locations. We're not talking about a great wall of the United States. We're not talking about a continuous wall from California down to Texas. We're talking about a wall in strategic locations, which then helps the Border Patrol agents do their job better.
Because there are some places that are so sparsely populated and the ground is so fierce, so harsh, you really don't need.
Correct.
So you've told us when you were on the program last time that about 10 to 15% of the border has serious fences in your view, and maybe you doubled that under this proposal.
That's what I'm thinking. Again, I don't have the exact specifics of what they're going to do, but I do know that they're looking in specific places like Laredo, Texas, where we have very, very little walls. Yet the state that Laredo, Texas borders is extremely violent, and so we're looking in locations like that. They're looking in locations like that, but I think it's going to be very effective.
What have you made of the really visceral response to this, the negative response to this from many people in the United States as well as from Mexico?
Well, I can understand, but Steve, you have to understand there's a lot of rhetoric out there, and a lot of what's being put out there. I mean, I've heard that this is a racist wall. This isn't a racist wall. We're not talking about keeping out legal immigrants. We're talking about keeping out illegal immigrants, and it has nothing to do with race because we get people from everywhere. We get people from Russia who are white that cross the border illegally. And so this isn't a racist wall. This is about the security and safety of the United States.
Although some people have pointed out nobody's talking about a wall on the Canadian border.
No, but we don't have the same problems on the Canadian border. In fact, that's where I work right now. I work on the Canadian border, and we just don't have the same number of people crossing the Canadian border illegally like what we do on the southwest border. It's a lot cheaper to go down to Mexico and cross the southwest border.
What do you think about the president's effort to compel, if he can, local and state authorities to be more helpful to the Border Patrol and immigration authorities in doing their jobs and rounding up people who are here illegally?
Well, So my understanding is that he's not compelling them to help us round them up. But what he is saying is if they come in contact, if a police officer, say from Phoenix Police Department, if a police officer from the Phoenix, Arizona Police Department comes in contact with somebody that he knows is here or suspects that is here illegally, then his responsibility is to contact an immigration enforcement officer to come in and find out. It's the same with me as a Border Patrol agent. If I make a vehicle stop and I find that illegal activity is taking place outside of the laws that I enforce.
Drunk driver, for example.
Exactly. It's my responsibility to call the local law enforcement so that they can come out and take care of the problem.
Are we not actually arguing about that much then? Because there are local authorities who are saying, yeah, if we find somebody who's obviously in violation, we have to turn them over. But we do not want to make that our job. We don't want it to be our job to seek them out or to hold people when otherwise there would not be reason to hold them.
And it's not going to be their job. It's not going to be their job to go seek out illegal immigrants in the United States. That is immigration's officers' jobs, and it's not theirs. But if they do come in contact with people that are in the country illegally, they should have a responsibility and duty to report people that are breaking the law.
In a few seconds, how different do you think the country could be in 3 or 4 years if these proposals are carried out?
Well, I think the country is going to be a lot safer.
A lot safer?
I really do, yes, absolutely. I mean, I was there with what they call the angel families of families that had children that were killed by persons that were in the United States illegally. If these laws are carried out properly, and he's not talking about new laws. By the way, he's not saying that he's going to give us new laws. He's talking about enforcing the laws that are currently on the books.
Brandon Judd, thanks for coming by. Really appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
He is the head of the Border Patrol Union.
Coming up on Fronteras, Texas Governor Greg Abbott stands with the president against sanctuary cities.
We are working on laws that will, one, ban sanctuary cities, remove from office any office holder who promotes sanctuary cities,
sure,
impose criminal penalties as well as financial penalties.
That story after this. I'm Norma Martinez, and this is Fronteras. President Donald Trump's order against sanctuary cities affects Travis County. A week ago, the sheriff there, Sally Hernandez, implemented a new immigration policy. Now, Texas Governor Greg Abbott is threatening to remove Sheriff Hernandez from office. KUT's Audrey McGlinchey reports.
Roughly 30 people stood atop a rickety podium. They held signs reading, "We are here to stay," and united against fear and hate. They began to chant.
Aquí estamos y no nos vamos. Aquí estamos
y no nos vamos.
Aquí estamos.
We're here and we're not going. The people had gathered because of two announcements Wednesday, both taking aim at Travis County and the sheriff's office. Here's Texas Governor Greg Abbott on Fox News. He laid out actions he would take against Hernandez and others that he says promote sanctuary city policies.
We are in a legislative session.
Right.
We are working on laws that will, one, ban sanctuary cities, remove from office any office holder who promotes sanctuary cities,
sure,
impose criminal penalties as well as financial penalties.
The governor also threatened to bar Travis County from certain grants, possibly costing the county $1.8 million. Abbott's edict came after Sheriff Hernandez announced Friday she would not honor requests from the Federal Immigration Agency to detain people booked into the jail. She would only do so when there's a warrant, or in the case that someone is charged with murder, sexual assault, or human smuggling. It's a policy that's totally legal. Here's Selena Moreno with the Mexican-American Legal Defense and Education Fund.
There is also no federal requirement to honor ICE detainers. It is completely voluntary. And in fact, several courts have held it unconstitutional to hold immigrants beyond the 48 hours on an ICE detainer without a warrant.
Moreno joined the crowd of advocates and immigrants Wednesday showing support for Hernandez. The same day, President Donald Trump signed an executive order targeting so-called sanctuary cities, or jurisdictions that do not honor ICE detainers. The order promises to strip these local governments of federal funds. Austin, for example, currently receives nearly $43 million in federal grants. Austin City Councilmember Greg Cassar did not parse words when talking about the day's actions.
Trump and Abbott's attempts to coerce our local police departments to become deportation agents are racist attempts, unconstitutional, and dangerous for our public safety.
The Texas Senate Republican caucus voiced its support for Abbott's proposed actions against Hernandez in a letter Wednesday. They pointed to Senate Bill 4, which bans so-called sanctuary cities from receiving state funding. The bill's scheduled for a public hearing next week. For Fronteras, I'm Audrey McGlinchey.
With President Trump promising to repeal the Affordable Care Act, some people who need health care may not realize it's still the law. Texas Public Radio's Wendy Rigby reports people can still sign up through Tuesday, January 31st.
¿Cuántos en la familia?
Cinco.
At Antioch Missionary Baptist Church on San Antonio's east side, Affordable Care Act navigators like Yvette Meza are busy gathering information from people who may qualify for health insurance through the ACA.
y viven aquí en San Antonio.
Sí.
In this fourth year of the ACA, Anel Trevino of the Daughters of Charity Services of San Antonio says groups like hers are trying to get out the word that Obamacare is not going away tomorrow.
Do I still need to get coverage? Yes, you do. Regardless of what happens, people need coverage. So just come get the assistance. It's free and it's available.
At San Antonio College, Spanish tutor Alfred Campos is signing up for the fourth time. He's 62 and says the ACA has provided the best health insurance coverage he's ever had.
There was a lot of mistaken notions. A lot of people thought that even though they enrolled, it was going to still cost them a lot.
That was not Campos's experience. When he started talking to his peers, more signed up.
When I told my coworkers, they signed up immediately. One found out and then another found out. It's more like word of mouth.
Although President Donald Trump campaigned on a promise to repeal Obamacare in his first 100 days in office and replace it, Campos says he thinks the tide is turning.
They kind of waffled a little bit on taking it away. Now they're coming back where they want to keep something.
This is my first time.
That's 37-year-old Akoko Amoven, a college student from Togo, West Africa. Before now, she relied on the Bexar County Public Hospital System's assistance program called CareLink for her medical needs. Finding out she qualified for Obamacare made this future nurse feel more secure.
I'm so happy that I got this thing done. Right now, I'm fine, but I just need it just in case.
Amoven is one of the so-called young and healthies the Affordable Care Act assumed would sign up in greater numbers to help keep the program well-funded. Overall, that hasn't happened. Now Amoven is keeping an eye on developments in Congress.
So I'm really concerned because I don't know what would be the final decision.
The Affordable Care Act is not a perfect bill. We definitely would welcome any improvement.
That's Joey Botta, Texas Deputy State Director of Enroll America. He says the political rhetoric surrounding the future of the ACA has made the job of signing people up much more challenging.
It is frustrating in the sense there's a lot of misinformation out there.
Before the Affordable Care Act, one in four people who live in Bexar County were uninsured, 25%. For the first time since those records have been kept, the number of uninsured is now less than 20%. More than 120,000 people in Bexar County enrolled in the ACA last year. Health and Human Services figures project a 1% increase this year. Ibarra says that's a trend across Texas and the rest of the country.
The state as a whole, we're looking right now at a 1% gain. And across the country, we're seeing more enrollments.
While that's far from the goal of everyone having health insurance, Ibarra and others say it would be a shame to throw out the gains made without a solid plan for what's next.
I don't think that we can afford, as a city or as a nation, to go back to that place.
Congressional Republicans have already started the process to get rid of Obamacare. But until they do, the deadline to sign up for health insurance through the Affordable Care Act is January 31st. Wendy Rigby, Texas Public Radio News.
The U.S. Supreme Court will not hear the case involving the Texas voter ID law. KUT's Ashley Lopez reports that's mostly because there are legal questions that are still unsettled.
I should start with the fact that this case has been around a long time, so a lot of judges have weighed in on this. I'll let Jennifer Clark with the Brennan Center, an attorney representing the plaintiffs, run through a list.
So there have been multiple courts at the trial level and at the appellate level, and some courts in Texas and some courts in Washington, D.C. that have taken a look at this law, this Texas strict photo ID law.
That's the one that requires voters to show one form of approved photo ID before they can cast a ballot. All these courts, by the way, have been unanimous in saying that the Texas law has the effect of discriminating against minorities. But believe it or not, there's still some things that aren't settled about the law. Well, in court anyway. There still isn't a final ruling on whether state lawmakers meant to discriminate when they passed the law. There was actually supposed to be a hearing on this issue this week, but it was pushed back a month. Ezra Rosenberg with the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law, also representing the plaintiffs, explains it was at the request of the Department of Justice.
Well, what they said in their papers was that they wanted to give the, what I think they call the new leadership of the Department of Justice, an opportunity to review the matter. Whether or not it leads to a change of position, we don't know. I can say that there's no basis for a change of position.
Rosenberg says that's because for the past 5 years, the DOJ has held the same position, and the facts haven't changed in the case. In the meantime, Chief Justice John Roberts said in an order that the Supreme Court won't take a look at the case, at least not yet. The state will be able to seek an appeal at a later time, presumably when the intent issue is worked out. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton issued a statement calling the voter ID law common sense and promised to continue to defend it in court. Both Ezra Rosenberg and Jennifer Clark say they hope a final decision comes soon.
Until such time as we get a definitive ruling that this law was enacted with a discriminatory intent, it's still on the books. And a law that was enacted with a discriminatory intent should not be on the books for 1 second longer than necessary.
Really, it's, you know, I guess I'm hopeful that it will be quick because voters have been waiting so long for this to be finally resolved.
While the legal battle continues, a federal judge put a temporary fix in place late last year aimed at making it easier to vote in Texas. Voters who have trouble getting an ID can sign a form and cast a regular ballot in all Texas elections for now. For Fronteras, I'm Ashley Lopez in Austin.
And that's it for Fronteras and our stories from the Southwest this week. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org. Alexis Yancey produced this broadcast. Shelley Koffler is our executive producer. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Thanks for joining us. From Texas Public Radio in San Antonio, I'm Norma Martinez.